Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Joy, do you have a favorite Starbucks holiday flavor?
It's not pumpkin spice, I'll tell you that.
Welcome to Job Logs, a podcast that features candid conversations with young professionals about work, life, and everything in between.
Greetings, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Job Logs. I am Joy Marie.
The Slytherin and Hufflepuff intro. I am Courtney.
And this is Job Logs. So first things first, you know, on a more serious note, really have to say our hearts and deepest prayers and condolences go out to all of the victims of the tragic attacks in Paris.
Definitely. It's so much craziness happening this week.
It is. And it's incredibly disheartening. So, you know, for all of those 129 families, those friends, those coworkers, those colleagues, anyone that was fortunate enough to know somebody that passed in those very, very tragic attacks, our hearts definitely go out to you. And, you know, you guys just show a little bit of kindness to people around you this week. I think things like that just remind me to be friendly and show love to my family and friends.
Definitely.
Yeah, but want to jump right into today's episode. We have some exciting stuff lined up for you guys.
Yes, I have old friends coming. I'm very excited about that. Got some creatives in the booth. Everyone knows I love a good creative.
Yes, that is our guest interview, so tune in a little bit later for that. But also, firstly, wanted to congratulate our past guest, Morgan DeBon, who's the CEO of Blavity, on her feature in Forbes. So
cool.
We'll link to that. Check her out. She's written up in Forbes talking about Blavity and her growth.
Yeah, doing it.
Yeah, we're always happy to see, you know, people in our network and circle flourishing. So congratulations, Morgan. Also want to plug again and remind you to download your free copy of our ebook, 43 Questions That'll Transform Your Job Interviews from Drab to Fab. So you can head to joblogs.com/ebook to download that through November 30th. And then we are removing it. It's going away.
So get your copy.
Yes. And then also just a little like plug. We were featured in Tomorrow Looks Bright, which is an awesome newsletter by Christy Tillman that features just awesome projects from women of color. So thank you, Christy, for the feature. You guys can go to tomorrowlooksbright.com to check her and the platform out.
Cool. So what's been happening in your world?
Oh, yeah. Time to clock in. So I celebrated my birthday, as you guys know. I went to Miami. And I wrote about it on the website on jawbox.com because during that trip, I had probably the worst customer service experience of my life with American Airlines at LaGuardia. Shout out to Michelle and Sabrina at Gate D10.
So many specifics.
It was terrible. I mean, it involved like shouting matches, and I don't have the energy to get into it, but it really just stemmed down to like terrible service and just not treating people nicely at work. So guys, please be kind to people around you. But I also had like one of the best experiences of my life at the Red Berry. Yes, the Red Berry, South Beach in Miami. It was just, like, phenomenal service. Like, I went down with my roommates. It was a girls' trip. They brought us, like, bottles for our birthdays and wrote personal handwritten notes. It was just really lovely. So, that was fun. In real life, I also hired someone at work.
Look at you, boss.
Yeah, so I am managing someone's whole, like, career and development. Which,
their
you
life
know,
is in your hands.
No biggie. But it's required a lot of, like, intention around, like, structuring not only my day, but her day, and also, like, getting to work earlier.
Setting an example.
Exactly. So that's kind of where I'm at. Other than that, still wrapping up the year. And then also we went to the pop-up magazine show that we told you guys about.
It was so cool.
Really cool. I loved it. So thanks again to Chaz Edwards and the whole team for extending an invite to the event and the after party.
Yes.
Had a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. What's up with you?
Everything's going really great. I made it through my group project, guys.
Oh, congratulations.
I'm very excited about that. It went really well. We had some hiccups that at first I had some thoughts about, but then I got to class and talked to other people about their experiences. Got off really easy on my part.
Really?
So God knows what I can bear, and I thank him for that.
Won't he do it?
And I've also, you know, like we said, there's so much happening in the news lately.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking a lot, Lord walk with me as I talk about this, but the Mizzou protests have been in the media a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't been following them, it got into the media because Mizzou students, they've been protesting really for months, actually.
Yeah.
Just about racial tensions on campus. And it came to a climax when a student went on hunger strike, and that spurred the football team to boycott like practice and their game until their president was removed.
Yep. Tim Wolf.
Yeah. And the president did resign.
He did.
So there was a lot in the media about that. And I first want to commend those students because, again, they've been doing this for months, even though we just read about it.
Yeah.
So that really takes like endurance and determination. And so kudos to them.
Yes.
Because I feel like youth are really what leads these movements.
Yeah. Because
like we're like kind of in the system. Like we have jobs. We have bills. So like I don't have that same I have that fire, but I don't have the freedom to like go out.
Yeah.
So just letting them know that
student activism is so important.
Yeah. Because I mean, so like important. I can support them, like whether it's my pocketbook or my platform. Yeah. So I'm happy to do that.
Yeah.
So like, thank you for going out there and doing that. But I was thinking about because I don't know why I read the comments of a news article, but I read them.
You taught me that.
I know. I don't do that. I do not do that normally. But I did, and a lot of people were saying, like, well, why do they expect, like, the president to be able to control individual students? Or there's a lot of feedback about, oh, why are we trying to coddle students? They want these safe spaces. And the world isn't a safe space.
This coddling student thing that I've been seeing.
And here's the thing. It's hard to wrap your head around operating in a space that isn't designed with you in mind. Mm-hmm. It's also very easily to take for granted when a space is designed for you in mind. And I was reflecting on that because I've taken for granted that the first 20 years of my life, I've operated in a space designed with me in mind.
Okay.
Like, I grew up in Prince George's County, along with Joy.
PG County.
It's known as, like, the richest black county in the country. Yep. But it is that, but it's right next to D.C. So, like, I've grown up with, like, a wide variety of black people.
Yes.
But the key was that, like, that was our space.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went to Howard University, HU. So I was around, again, a space catered to me and mine. So it was a point to be made that, like, oh, to reaffirm this young woman, to say, like, oh, the way your hair looks is beautiful, that, oh, your culture matters.
Yeah.
Oh, you can do all of these things, even if someone suspects differently. And having that, like, so just, like, shape the confidence I have and, like, contrast that with going into a space where, like, oh, the streets are named after a slave owner, or your dorm room, or your classroom is in a building where you know this person is a racist, or going to a job where, like, senior management feels comfortable making watermelon and chicken jokes. True story from my life. That. So, like, those little things, like, when you're thinking about, like, why are people making big deals about little things?
Yes.
Those little things, like, add up.
They do.
They chip away.
They do. And the reality, too, is that for a lot of us, we've been complacent with dealing with those little things because it's just always been the norm.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that tension that's coming from people who can't relate and don't understand is because they haven't seen us get riled up about these things because we've been dealing with them and we've been complacent in that for a while. But now it's like a breaking point and it's a tipping point. And these issues pick up momentum. They pick up steam. So it's so empowering and so awesome to see students speaking out against things. And, like, the whole coddling argument really, really ticks me off because, like, just because it's happening in one place, that's how these things happen. It's a domino effect. Yeah. Like, one voice is brave enough and loud enough to start to influence others who maybe, yeah, you hadn't heard from them previously, but guess what? You're hearing from them now.
Yeah.
It's always been an issue. Maybe we just weren't speaking up about it.
Yeah. So I think it's just kind of be open-minded and understanding as people create, not necessarily safe spaces, but spaces that aren't detrimental.
Yeah, and I mean, I have really debated making this a rant, and I'm just not going to get into it. But I would say from a professional perspective, please watch y'all's comments on social media. Please, for the love of all things living, please.
I don't understand the people who do it, like, when it's Facebook comments.
Yeah.
Like, you haven't seen people get fired over this?
Yes. Place? Yes. Like, I don't have the energy to get into it fully. Yeah. But look, we're all entitled to our perspectives. And I believe in respecting different opinions and perspectives. Do you need to share those perspectives all the time? No. Please be sensitive about your social posting. You have a responsibility to yourself. And yes, anything you say on the internet can always come back to haunt you. So I'm just going to leave that there.
Yeah. We're dropping the mic.
Yes.
Boom.
So now it's time for Rants, Raves, and Reviews. This is the segment of the show where we both share a rant, rave, or a review of a product, a service, a tool, or an experience that's positively or negatively impacting our professional lives. Mm-hmm. So this week,
are
Courtney,
you ranting, raving, or reviewing? Because I'm raving.
I'm actually raving.
Oh, good.
Which is rare for me. My favorite, my default tends to be rant, but I'm going to go ahead and rave. Okay. I'm going to give kudos. So we talked about, you know, the tragic incidents that happened in Paris over the weekend. So I'm going to give a rave to Facebook for a little feature called Safety Check, which I recently learned really about. Cool. So introduced last year, it's a feature basically on the platform that was inspired by an employee project, which is awesome to me, like the fact that one employee spoke up and had a voice. And it was basically in response to the Japan tsunami from 2011. Mm-hmm. So the employee created a tool to be used during natural disasters where you can go on, Facebook would, one, identify if you're in a region with a natural disaster, and then give you this prompt to check in and let your friends and family know you're safe or, you know, or not. And the employee created it with natural disasters in mind. And this past weekend with the attacks in Paris, it was the first time it was actually used in a terrorist attack.
Okay.
So people were able to log onto the platform and indicate if they were safe. You can also go on there and indicate if, like, a friend or someone around you who doesn't have internet access is safe as well.
That's really cool.
It's so dope to me, like, to see technology used for, like, social good and for impact in that way. I think a lot of times we can get stuck in, like, our bottom line and our profits and loss and how's this going to make money for the company. But, like, to see a company rally behind an idea that an employee had that's really impacting humanity in a really meaningful way, to me, is so impressive.
Yeah.
So I love that.
Yeah, and I do hope they roll it out to other areas. Because I know y'all going to find out that I'm a little touch of militant. When they rolled it, I'm like, so what about all the other countries that got issues going on?
True, but this
is the first time that they rolled it out.
Yes,
that's such a great tool.
Yeah, and I mean, they're iterating as they're growing too, right?
Yeah.
Again, it's like, it's an icky time, it's an icky topic, but
kudos
to Facebook for doing that. Communication is so critical during those times. So.
Yes.
Love that. What are you
doing? Raving. I spent last weekend binge watching Master of None on Netflix.
I am on episode 2.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It's so good. It's Aziz Ansari's new show.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see it for his stand-up, so I was So I was a little touch and go with this.
Okay.
But I tried it. So funny. Really, really smart, too. Mm-hmm. Like, it critiques everything from dating to race in Hollywood, and you laugh the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. And sorry to be on my, like, change gonna come steez this episode, but I love how diverse the show was.
Yeah.
Okay. I loved how diverse the show was. And it was so interesting to see a show where an array of different ethnicities were centered.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when we talk about diversity, I think a lot of people think about it like, oh, you know, black people just want to see more black people, Hispanics mm-hmm. want to see more Hispanics.
Mm-hmm. Like, but throw a couple of them
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, but like, I want to see, like, how does a Pakistani American live? How does an Asian American live?
Yeah.
What's it like to have parents who are immigrants?
Yeah.
Like, I'm interested, and I want to see all those different experiences.
Yes.
And just from a storyteller perspective, like, the beauty of story is that you connect with people, you see how we're all the same.
Yes.
It's very hard to do that when all the stories are about the same people.
You ain't lying.
So kudos to Aziz, kudos to Netflix. I love how they really take chances on shows that don't go with a formula.
Yes, yeah.
Yay. So waste your whole weekend on it.
Just love it.
Put it all in there. All right, guys, we have a great guest today. We have JT Liss in the studio. He's a photographic artist, poet, and educator for social change. And much of his work is a commentary on social issues that he uses to raise awareness and help raise money for nonprofits throughout the country. JT is also the founder, or co-founder, rather, of TASPAR, an affordable community workspace located in East Harlem. He's also a special part of my history because he was my first print interview profile
that
I ever did for Blue Magazine.
That's right.
So welcome, JT.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Joy, why don't you kick it off? First question.
Yeah. So the first thing I need to ask is, what is a photographic artist?
Photographic artist. Yeah. So I've been messing around with that term a little bit, probably over the past couple of years, because what I do is a little different than what you may see as traditional photography.
Okay.
So I take multiple images that are mine, and then I layer them together, and it creates a piece of artwork that I then, you know, put on canvas or different material and sell in galleries and things like that. So it's not just like photo shoots.
Right.
It's random things I see on the street, you know, splatter paint on the sidewalk or just a cityscape scene or even street. It's a combination of all different forms of photography into one piece.
Very dope. Yeah. I love it. How'd you fall into that? Because that sounds like something you've kind of created or a term you've kind of coined for yourself. So.
Totally. I'm completely self-taught. Mm. So I've been doing this for about 5 years now. And it started off with photography, mainly like street photography, just walking around like East Harlem and the South Bronx and just capturing the scene as I saw it. And then just playing around with the computer. I started off with a PC, like Microsoft Windows Gallery.
And
I just
you?
Like playing around with the equalizers. And I thought it was pretty cool to change the coloring. And then, you know, that led to working with different programs. And then when I found layering, I mean, that was it.
I relate to that. Courtney knows, like, Aaron and I, who's a past guest on the show, we grew up playing around in Photoshop. I don't even think it was Photoshop at the time. It was a program before that, like some picture editor, and you just kind of make graphics and design things and play around with it. So that's pretty dope.
That's really, you know, just the playing aspect is really how I evolved and found my voice.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, they, you know, whether it works for them or not, they choose to go to a school and have professors tell them what is what or how to specifically do something. And I just was just messing around and made tons of mistakes. But through those mistakes, it led to something pretty interesting, I think.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So tell us the story of how you found photography or you discovered it.
Oh, man. I recently moved to New York City. I moved to New York City because of a girl. And then right after, we, like, broke up, and I was, like, by myself. Right? It just didn't work out. And I was in the city by myself, which is, like, a terrifying thing. I had no friends because I was friends with all of her friends.
Oh,
and, of course,
the breakup,
they totally ditched
you?
Me. Yeah. So I just was listening to music and, you know, walking around the city, and I really got to explore the living organism that is New York.
Yeah.
And depending on the music I was listening to, it kind of made me, you know, feel a certain way and see things a certain way. And I was just like, man, I really would love to start capturing some of the things that I'm seeing right now.
Yeah.
And then I took a bus home to New Jersey one day and grabbed my mom's point and shoot and came back and just took thousands of photos. And I was just firing away at everything. And then from there, you know, it evolved. Mm-hmm. And I was a full-time teacher at the time as well. And I don't know. I just made the crazy decision to resign from teaching. And I'm mm-hmm. like, I'm going to be a full-time artist. Well, mm-hmm. the universe doesn't work that way for you.
Yeah, I was going to say, at what point did you make that decision? Because in both with photography and now the photographic art, when does, like, the art become the craft that's actually paying the bills? Like, when did you know this is beyond a hobby and this is profitable? This is something I can sell to people and that I can get people to buy into.
Yeah, well, that was a growing process, because mm-hmm. initially, you know, I kind of jump into things sometimes,
yeah,
without fully thinking it through, which can Same. Be very good and very bad. And so I resigned, and I'm like, I'm going to be an artist, and
what does that even
negative
mean?
Balance
right.
and evictions go? Later. I realized that, you know, I needed to have a balance yeah. with the work and the creative life. So mm-hmm. I've been teaching only part-time now.
Mm.
And that supplements the income. And from there, I've been selling artwork, you know,
okay.
fairly mm-hmm. consistently to the point where I have that nice duo between the two. Because I love teaching as well. I think it's a very yeah. important yeah. part of who I am.
Yeah, definitely. So talk a little bit about how, like, the work influences other aspects of your life, and then those aspects influence the work. Because I've noticed, like, your photography, it kind of feeds into all these other things mm-hmm. that interest you, especially, like, the social change aspect.
Yeah. I went to college for social work.
Mm.
So, I mean, I've been in the trenches for about, you know, 13 years now, just in inner cities and also, like, emergency shelters.
Mm.
And residential facilities for kids who were, like, abused. And,
wow.
you know, it's always been revolved around working with kids and trying to educate them, whether mm-hmm. social, emotional, or academically. And so that's always been a part of me. I've always mm-hmm. wanted to give back. I've always wanted to help. So what I do with the photography for social change is I create pieces of artwork that have a social commentary, that have a story about things that are going on, whether it's regarding, you know, inequality, racism, sexism, yeah. you know, anything like that. And part of it is to get someone to ultimately think
yeah.
in a different way, even if it's just for a brief second, because then it's possible yeah, that change yeah. can occur. And then from the sales of artwork, I give a portion of the proceeds to different grassroots organizations that are doing mm. some pretty cool stuff.
That's really dope. You know, one thing I really love about what you're saying is, like, you allowed yourself permission to let what was, like, a natural passion for you and interest to permeate and almost, like, inform the work, to Courtney's point. I think a lot of people I meet struggle with connecting, like, seemingly disparate, like, aspects of their life. Like, I have my interests over here. Mm-hmm. I have my work over there. How do you, like, what's your advice to people about bringing them together? And when do you find opportunities to do that?
I mean, starting off, you had to make time. If you really want it that bad, you have to make time no matter yeah. what. The ultimate goal really is to have that balance. You know, it's very difficult to be just a straight up full-time artist in any yeah. in any medium. So if you can find another occupation that you really, really enjoy doing
yeah.
that doesn't take up all of your time, that gives you that time for a creative outlet,
yes,
it's a beautiful marriage between the two things.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to get there sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, you have to do things that you don't enjoy to give yourself time to do things that you do. But ultimately, that kind of comes together and you can find two things that you love and do it simultaneously, or multiple mm-hmm. things. I mean, everyone in New York City knows. Everyone has, like, six, seven different jobs, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you just make it happen to do what you love. Everyone's basically here trying to follow their dream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you find a way.
I love that.
It's cool. And I wanted to talk a little bit about kind of, I guess, cultivating growth in your work. Because when we met, I feel like you were just kind of finding your groove. Mm-hmm. And now you're, like, doing all these shows and exhibitions, and you're able to have an income from that. How do, like, once you find that sweet spot and that aesthetic, how do you keep that from, like, stifling your creativity? How do you keep pushing yourself?
I mean, I hit creative ruts just like anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to my exhibit in Spain this summer, I was in a huge rut creatively.
Oh, wait, what? Exhibit in Spain.
I know. I tried to slip that in like, nonchalantly.
No.
Yeah, it's kind of
nothing slips by.
It was kind of an amazing experience. Yeah, I'm trying to be modest, but it was really.
Tell us about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, pause.
Yes.
Spain. Oh man, that was. It was a branch off of one of the exhibits I had in East Harlem. The owner of the gallery and curator of the exhibit that I had there knew a couple of artists who were also owners of galleries in Spain and New York.
Okay.
And he connected me with them, and they were like, yeah, dig your work, man. Let's make something happen. So that was, once I found out, I had about 2 months to raise money and get out there. And yeah. I was able to do it thanks to, you know, helpful donations and people like stepping up and buying my artwork. And
yeah.
I was able to do it, you know, and that's kind of been the, you know, I guess my mantra is just, you just make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you need to do, you make it happen. And it's funny story, because I was trying to find the most cost effective way to get 15 canvas pieces of art out to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just mail the stuff out there.
Oh, can't you?
It costs so much money. And so I found the best way was to basically have them rolled with the wood pieces and put them in huge duffel bags and kind of hope for the best and bring it along with me. So I have these like two square.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
They were like 15 feet long, and they're each like 90 pounds. So I was oversized, overweight. For the additional charges.
Yeah.
But they were cool. They only charged me for overweight, but it went through this conveyor belt because it was curbside check-in.
Yeah,
I know you were sweating.
So now this, I'm like, please let it get to the plane. And
did
this
it
curbside
make...
check-in, like, you imagine when it goes through, it branches out like a tree to all the airlines it could potentially go to.
God.
So it was very nerve-wracking.
Well, did it make it?
I get into Spain and only one bag's there. So I'm at like the help desk, and you know, I don't speak Spanish too well, and no one was speaking English, and I was like frustrated. But the bag was so big that it had to go through like their freight entrance. So for a good hour, I was sweating it like big time. But it worked out. I got everything there. I got everything up.
Awesome.
And, but yeah, it was kind of crazy.
Cool.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so back to derail.
No,
back
that
to
was
your theme, because I thought that was
good.
A really good. Question just about growth
and
getting there.
Out of those creative ruts.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I'm in a rut, one of the main things I do is like read, you know, read something new, read a new book or.
What do you read? What are you reading?
Oh, man. Currently, I need to get out of this nonfiction thing because it's getting me. I'm going down the rabbit hole with
it. But you need to get out of nonfiction?
Just for a little bit, because
Okay. Right
now I'm in the middle of. I'm almost finished with People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn, which I recommend anyone to read that.
Okay.
It's a very important book. It's basically just the story of the United States told by, you know, the forgotten ones, you know, the ones whose stories aren't told because the elite and the wealthy are the ones that tell the history, you know. And then the other one I'm just starting is the new Jim Crow, which
I've heard great things about that.
You know, talks about, you know, the not the military, but the which industrial complex,
the prison
industrial complex, and how messed up it is. Privately owned prisons making a ton of money off of, you know, this war on drugs that we have that started, you know, back in the 70s and 80s. So, into some, like, you know,
deep
stuff.
So you need to pull back a bit.
Yeah, maybe read, like, a graphic novel or something, you know.
That's true. Balance is important.
Yeah.
So you stay inspired by basically just keeping
just
up with what's going on.
Keeping up with what's going on. Even new music is always very inspiring. there's a new guy based out of East Harlem called Dave East, hip hop artist.
Dave East.
The dude is the truth, man.
Yeah.
He's really good. He's one of Nas's proteges. So
oh, wow.
That's always helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I also want to get into just kind of the economics of what you do. Like, I think a lot of creatives struggle with taking their art and their craft, myself
the
included.
Hustle.
Yeah, the hustle. Like, how do you make money?
Yeah, because I think people from the outside looking in, they think, oh, I just have to make something really dope.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are going to see that it's dope. Success.
Yeah.
Is that the case, Jason?
No, yeah, I made that mistake, too. When I resigned from teaching, it was like, everyone's going to buy my artwork, and no one knew who I was or what I was putting out there.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, at the time, my biggest fan was still my mom, you know, which, love you,
Moms
Mom.
Moms are great.
You
know?
Shout out to Mom.
But I need a little more than that. Mm-hmm. So it was hard. I mean, the hustle was just continuing to create. That was really the only thing I had control over. There were so many outside variables that were kind of pushing me down, you know, having to go to check cashing places because I made $175 catering, but I'm negative $600 balance. So that's not going to work because I need food.
That's real.
So just continuing to fight through that and know even in the most difficult, the darkest times, all you have control over is your ability to create, whatever that may be. And the more you create, the better you get, the more you grow. Then people see that you're still doing it.
But I'm going to challenge you a little bit because I don't know. I feel like that's true, but I feel like you've done a really great job of, you know, you got curated in this exhibit in Spain. You have to be in the right places and you have to put yourself there. So,
yeah.
I mean, I want to hear about, like, especially as a creative or artist, what, you know, what is kind of the behind the scenes? Like, how do you get connected with museum curators?
Hit us to the game.
Yes. You know, what do people have to think about beyond that creation?
Especially as a visual artist, you have to go to other people's shows. You have to support other artists. And you have to meet these individuals. And mainly, I mean, what I do, I don't go to a ton of shows. I'm not going to a show every night just to be there.
Right.
I go to shows that are of artists that I respect or artists that I've met that are just cool people. You know, you want to surround yourself around people that you vibe with really well.
Yeah.
Because especially in the street art scene that I'm like trying to get into partially in right now, you know, I'm still like a photographer to many of them, but I'm like, here's my work, man. So I'm kind of trying to cross over in that, but you know, there's some individuals that I don't vibe with.
Yeah.
And I just stick around the ones that I do. And like with anything, you need to have a mentor of sorts. Oh. And, for me, that guy is Brian Karhadzis. He goes by BK the Artist. And, I've known him.
Oh, follow him on Instagram.
Yeah,
he's really dope.
So he's like blowing up right now. He's doing some really big things, but I was able to connect with him probably about 5 or 6 years ago because we have mutual Baltimore friends. So he was still very much up and coming, like doing live paintings at like a lounge on 9th Avenue. And I just showed up and I was like, yo, BK, my name's JT. We have a mutual friend and it was just nothing but love from him.
Yeah.
And I stayed in touch and, you know, I learned a lot from him, how to get yourself out there, how to continue to hustle, you know, because I have no background in art.
Right.
You know, I was very, very green to everything. Right. So, yeah, having a mentor for sure.
That's dope.
What are the baby steps, though? What's, like, your first step to showing your work? Because I know people are like, oh, I want to get into an exhibit. And what I found talking to different artists is, like, it's very much like you kind of have to earn your stripes. Like, sometimes you just put your work in, like, a coffee shop and hope someone sees it. Like, what are, like, those first steps?
The first steps for me were definitely coffee shops, whether they're local in the neighborhood that just opened up. Like, you want to be the first one there, like, hey, I'm an artist. Yeah. You need some stuff on your walls? Yeah. Like, if they say no, you're like, all right, you try again next week. You know, maybe
you actually do.
You wear a different outfit or something. Maybe they think you're a different person.
Yeah.
But you just keep trying, you know, and you have to. You can't go from 0 to 100. You can't go from creating your first piece of art to having a gallery that's not real.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And personally with me, I'm not the type of person to wait for someone to be like, okay, you're good enough to have an exhibit. I was making my own. You know, I was, you know, going to spaces And I was lucky enough that there are a couple spots in East Harlem where I knew the individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let me just do a one night show, and I'll split costs with you. I'll give you a percentage of sales.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've gone on Craigslist and just like, hey, there's a spot, you know, on the Lower East Side that wants to have a show. And I put my artwork up there, and like, seriously, no one showed up. Like, not even my girlfriend showed up. Like, because she had something going on that night. But like, literally, I was sitting there drinking by myself. But like, you got to brush that off.
And, you got to deal with the rejection.
There's tons of rejection.
Yeah.
You know, and there still is. You just keep moving.
Very cool. So I want to shift gears because we introduced you. We talked a little bit about Taskbar. Mm-hmm. Tell us what that is and the inspiration for creating that space.
The inspiration behind Taskbar was, you know, my partner Jenny Lynn and I, we have, you know, a loft space that has like open room in like the living area.
You're grossly underselling it, right?
It's a great spot.
I was
at
a holiday party a couple years ago. It's like probably the dopest like loft space I've been in.
And it's not expensive. We like lucked out big time with this space.
Mm-hmm.
But we had this, and she's a writer. She's been a writer. She's been working for herself for probably about eight or nine years now.
Okay.
So she was another person I looked up to when, you know, I'm waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go teach full time.
Yeah.
And I see her, she like shoots me a text at like 1:32 in the afternoon. She's like, yeah, I'm just getting ready, starting my day. And she makes her own hours. You know? She's a creative as well. So the majority of time she's creating, it's like 3-4 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, man, I want to do something like that. I want to be able to have my own time. And that turned into us wanting to create a space, an affordable space for other individuals who may be freelancing or who just may be creatives in general. Because the most, you know, when you're working at home, it can be a very unproductive place to be.
Oh, don't you know it.
You have the couch, you have television, you have all these things,
but kitchen,
the kitchen, right?
the kitchen,
right?
Seamless.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. You spend more time ordering food than actually getting work done, you know. But like the simple practice of sitting at a desk changes everything, you know. And it's different from a cafe because you may go into a cafe and it's all filled up.
Yeah.
Or like little things like, oh, you have your laptop. You have to trust the person next to you when you go to the bathroom that they're not going to jack
true.
It. Or
That's
you
true.
Take it with you. And then when you come back, you lose your spot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But so you're talking about like creating structure and discipline around the creative process, which I love because I think that's something a lot of creatives do struggle with. So how do you stay on task? How do you make sure you're delivering work, you know, meeting deadlines or even creating deadlines for yourself if they're not being self like imposed by other sources?
I try and make it a point to I'm very much I base a lot of my stuff off the energy, what I'm feeling, you know, because the energy I have when I'm creating something visually is completely different than when I'm writing something. And I have to be aware of that. So at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I might be getting ready to go to bed. And then all of a sudden I feel this. And there was like, there's this TED talk I saw that made total sense. It was this woman who was, she was talking about a woman who was this poet back in like the early 1900s. And she would be like farming in her field. And she would feel this like energy kind of coming. And she knew it was her poem that she was supposed to be writing. So she would run home and get that pen to the paper because if that didn't happen, if she didn't harness that, that energy would go somewhere else. And it's like, well, no, that's mine. Yeah. I want it. So you have to like just be open to what you're feeling and try and make it a point to, even if you don't, if it's not something that you're ready to post up or it's not your favorite work, just to continue to practice and keep creating, you know. It's hard, you know. It's hard to stay disciplined, especially when you're, you know, working at home and or working at a different space. It's it's a practice for sure.
Definitely. But I'd also like to hear, are there any, like, tools or trends that you're really paying attention to that you kind of want to share with other creatives that are really helping you with your work?
For me personally, I don't use Photoshop. I use a combination of two computers and three different programs.
Mm.
So it's drawn out, but it's my process.
Okay.
But what one of the programs that I'm using right now is Pixlr. It's pixlr.com.
Yeah, I know.
And it's a free online editing program that helps me create. It's a major component in what I do.
I can't believe you are using that. That's like,
yeah.
I mean, when you look at the work, and you guys, I'm definitely going to link this. That's phenomenal that you're using free software. I think a lot of times we think we have to invest in the most expensive, cutting edge, like, you know, tool to create quality work.
Yeah. Yeah. And even with like, so I have a DSLR with a huge wide angle and telephoto lens. And I was using that for a while, but it's too hard to get organic shots when you have this huge target on you. People are like, well, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So I got this point and shoot. It's a Fuji FX10.
Wow.
And it's probably, at this point, it's probably only like $300 now.
Yeah.
But I carry that around with me and I use that. And it creates, when I blow my pieces up to like 40 by 60, which is really large, and the quality's still there. So you don't have to spend tons of money. You don't have to get the new, you know, Nikon, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know.
I love that. Just create where you are.
Yeah.
Definitely. So what's up next? I know you mentioned before we start recording that you're kind of going back into the caves.
Oh, I'm in hard.
The caves.
I'm in hard right now. When I got back from Barcelona, I just, I was so inspired. And it kind of goes into the, you know, the episode that you had a little while ago talking about being in the moment and enjoying the moment. There was one crazy part where I was in Rome for like 2 days because, I mean, this is my first time in Europe, so why not try and see something else, you know?
Obviously.
So I was in Rome and like the sun was setting and I'm looking at the Colosseum having a glass of wine and it's like, get out of here. You gotta be kidding me. It was like, because the first like 4 days I was just so into like stretching all the canvases and getting things ready.
Yeah.
That was my first like breather moment.
Mm.
And I took that back home with me. And I've been like, I made it a thing. Like since I got back, I think I've created like over 30 pieces.
Wow.
And a lot of them deal with people, portraits, faces. And that's kind of the direction I want to go in right now.
Yeah. I love it. This is exciting. Well, thank you,
JT,
thank you
for joining us and for the inspiration for all of you creative minds out there. You know, we hope that this really kind of resonated with you in a special way. It certainly did with me. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Where can we find you around the web? Where can the people connect with your work?
The website's jtlistphotography.com. And then on Instagram, that's where you'll probably see the majority of my newer pieces. It's at jtlissphotoart.
Awesome.
And that's my Twitter handle as well.
Great. And you're on Facebook,
Facebook,
right?
JTLiss. I'm open. Friend me. Do whatever. Don't be crazy or anything.
Fantastic. Thank you, JT.
Thank you guys so much.
It's time for Ask Job Logs. It's our segment of the show where we open the floor to you. So if you have a question for us about work, whether it's a difficult boss or tough life decisions, hit us up. We want to help you.
Yes.
Send your questions to ask@joblogs.com or hit us up at joblogs.com/askjoblogs.
Yes.
So the first question is, what's this question from, Joy?
This question.
Is it anonymous?
It is anonymous.
Okay.
So it kind of came out of a conversation, but I'm going to go ahead and leave her anonymous.
Okay.
And it reads, I was recently offered a contractor job at a company I really want to work for, but the money is funky. I asked for $63,000 and was offered $65,000 with no room to negotiate. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and say she asked for 65 and was offered 63.
Right, that doesn't make sense.
I think it was the other way around, with no room to negotiate. I'm not that excited about working in this department, but I really want to work at this company. I've also been offered a promotion and a raise at my current company. And then there's an update from when this was submitted that says, I was told the offer was rescinded because I didn't respond by 4 p.m. when the offer was made at 9 a.m.
What?
The recruiter kept calling me.
gives you less than a day to okay. You can start this.
Yeah.
Start
so, this I mean, and that says a lot right there. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to heed the signs. The way a company handles the whole onboarding, recruiting, hiring process can be very indicative of the culture there. And so it sounds like you're seeing some disorganization. It sounds like you're seeing like a lot of escalation and things being made very urgent, same day, get me a response. Like,
yeah, and that's probably how they'll handle every project.
Right. So you need to ask yourself, is this a role you want? And then also like with the salary thing, I mean, if you asked for 65 and they gave you 63, like, that's petty.
You think it's petty?
That's petty Olympics. Yes, it is. And I'll tell you why. Because, okay. I mean, like, if this is a big corporation that has the budget and they just, there's no room, understandably, sometimes that is the case. But I think for me, coupled with everything else this person's dealing with, to me, it just feels like not a place that's really going to work with you. There are already some, you got to listen to yourself, right? Yeah. You got to listen to yourself. Like, there's some factors that are off here for you, some things you're not feeling great about. Mm-hmm. It's a big decision to leave a current company.
Yeah, true. True.
Especially one that's like giving you, about to give you a promotion or giving you a promotion. So,
yeah, it's one of those things like you have to judge, like, is it worth what you gain? Is it worth what you give up?
Yes, exactly. Okay, so it is time for Hired and Fired.
Special time.
Yes. Hired and Fired is the segment of the show where we give a positive nod to folks in the media or pop culture that are just killing the game. Or we serve up termination papers to people who are not. And you can see the whole Hired and Fired team from episodes past at joblogs.com/payroll. So I am up this week.
Yes. Are you hiring or are you firing?
I am actually hiring.
Nice.
I'm feeling positive today.
Good. Spread the love.
Yes. And so I am serving up paperwork to Danny Meyer.
Who is Danny Meyer?
Danny Meyer is the CEO and the restaurateur of the Union Square Hospitality Group, which is a really big hospitality group here in New York City. They are behind some really huge restaurant names like the North End Grill, the Modern. Some of you guys might know Shake Shack. He founded that. I think they might have actually sold it, or actually, I'm not sure, but he's
Danny
behind
and I
that.
Are great. For
yes,
this.
Yes. Danny Meyer is behind that. And the reason why I'm hiring Danny is because last month they announced that they were going to institute a policy to not tip, basically, any of their employees. So, no
so
tipping
customers
policy.
Customers don't tip.
Yes, customers would not tip employees. Basically, instead of tipping, they were going to increase the wages of those, the hostesses, the chefs, the cooks, some of the front restaurant staff that don't typically get, you know, don't get it, get to take advantage of like tips that waiters and waitresses are getting. And that announcement was met with a lot of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of surprised to hear that because while it is a pretty disruptive move in terms of like, most restaurants here in the U.S. do have a tipping policy. You know, the staff has tipped if you like the service, anywhere from, you know, 15-ish to 25%. This is really common in Europe. So when I go to visit my parents who happen to live in Switzerland and Geneva, a lot of times, like, we'll leave a restaurant and I will, like, hound my dad. I'll be like, oh, my gosh, like, we have to tip. We didn't tip enough. And my dad has been telling me for years, like, Joy, these guys are making more money than you're probably making. So you need to relax. Yeah, so they're paid very well. They tend to be paid generally very well in Europe. And so it's kind of nice to see that coming here to the States for a couple of reasons. One, because to me, waiters, waitresses, hosts, people that work in restaurants are probably some of the hardest working people I know.
Listen.
Like,
my first job was a waitress.
Oh, was it?
Oh, my God.
I didn't know that.
Never again in life. As soon as I was internship available to do one, I did it.
Really?
It's so hard.
It's hard work. They're on their feet all day, all night. They're cleaning up. They're, you know, on deck to do whatever it is that you're asking them to do. So I think, yeah, like, let's raise the wages to make it the type of field where you can have, like, growth, advancement, and mobility. You can move up if you want to. Like, in a city in, like, New York City, I learned this when I worked in retail, like, retail, hospitality. Those are some tough and really competitive industries in a city like this. So I'm a fan of it. But the reason why... to bring it back to the hire, the reason why I want to hire Danny is because I think a lot of times we can get very comfortable in, you know, in just saying, like, as rationale for not doing something, this is the way it's always been done. Mm. And that's a lot of what I was seeing in terms of some of the resistance and the tension around his decision to do this at his 13 restaurants. You know, it's great to sometimes just step out of that and say, does this make sense for me and my business? And if not, let's do something differently. Yeah. So, Danny, you are hired. You just go on, pack your bags, and leave that hospitality group and come work for the money team.
You're so silly. Well, thank you guys for joining us for another episode of Job Logs.
Yes.
Great episode. Fun episode.
So much fun.
I had fun doing this one.
Yeah. And you don't have to wait till Mondays to connect with us, as many of you have already discovered. Mm-hmm. You can hit us up anytime at joblogs.com. That's where we post all of our amazing content and articles, as well as the episodes. At Joblogs, all over social media, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. And we have a weekly newsletter. So make sure you sign up at joblogs.com.
And you can catch me, if you insist, on social media at Cleave Out Loud on Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat.
Yes, and I am Hey Miss Parker, MissParkerr, two R's at the end. Don't forget to rate and review us on the iTunes store.
Oh, my God. I need to read this. This is our featured review from at Jeremy D. Will. Who's my best friend? But he also is the most truth-telling person. So, like, if it sucks, he would tell us.
This review is an honor.
So this is a review. I live for the side banter and the genuine laughter. It sounds as if you guys are having a party, and I want to be in attendance. Yes.
Well, Jeremy, you could join us anytime.
You better write
Thank
that
you
review.
For that review. You guys, if you like any particular episodes of the podcast, please consider submitting us to earbud.fm, which is a new project from NPR. You can't, like, just submit your own podcast, which I think is, like, awesome. It's a phenomenal way to really get to the bottom of really great content. So if you guys like any particular episodes of ours, consider submitting us to earbud.fm. Special thanks as we wrap up to our producer and audio engineer, Adrian Wagner. Also thanking Mercy Sound Recording Studios.
Yes, with these lovely couches. We're so comfortable.
Yes, we have been living it up over here. And thanks to Greg Jansen, who helped us out in the studio today.
And thank you.
Thank you.
You, that one with the earbuds in. You. Thank you for listening.
Till next time.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.